Oh, maybe I should tell the rest of my joke. So it turns out the hot dog vendor is also a Buddhist. So when he was asked he made the hot dog and gave it to the monk, and then the monk says, "Where's my change?" The hot dog vendor says, "Change comes from within." Okay. So, all right. Deep breath. A couple deep breaths. Just get yourself back in your body. And I'll try to talk into the microphone. So, praise to Shakyamuni Buddha. Teacher, foe destroyer, thus gone, fully and perfectly awakened Buddha, endowed with knowledge and good conduct, gone to bliss, knower of the world, helmsman of ordinary beings to be tamed, supreme one, teacher of all gods and men, Buddha, foe destroyer, glorious victorious one, Shakyamuni, to you I pay homage, make offerings and go for refuge. Teacher, foe destroyer, thus gone, fully and perfectly awakened Buddha, endowed with knowledge and good conduct, gone to bliss, knower of the world, helmsman of ordinary beings to be tamed, supreme one, teacher of all gods and men, Buddha, foe destroyer, glorious victorious one, Shakyamuni, to you I pay homage, make offerings and go for refuge. Teacher, foe destroyer, thus gone, fully and perfectly awakened Buddha, endowed with knowledge and good conduct, gone to bliss, knower of the world, helmsman of ordinary beings to be tamed, supreme one, teacher of all gods and men, Buddha, foe destroyer, glorious victorious one, Shakyamuni, to you I pay homage, make offerings and go for refuge. When you, chief of humans, were born, you took seven steps on this great earth, and you said, I am supreme in this world. To you who were wise at that time, I prostrate. Completely pure body, supremely fine form, ocean of wisdom like a golden mountain, phase that blazes in the three worlds, supreme protector, to you I prostrate. Endowed with the supreme marks, a face like the stainless moon, a color like gold, to you I pay homage. The tree, aren't I not like you, who is free from dust? Matchless one, endowed with knowledge, to you I prostrate. Protector, endowed with great compassion, omniscient teacher, field of ocean-like merits and good qualities, to the thus gone I prostrate. Through purity, free from attachment, through virtue, releases from the evil gone realms, unique, supreme, ultimate meaning, to the Dharma that brings peace, I prostrate. From freedom, teaching the path, well abiding in the pure trainings, holy field endowed with good qualities, to the Buddha also, I prostrate. Homage to the Supreme Buddha, homage to the Dharma refuge, homage to the great Sangha, to all three ever devout homage. To all worthy of respect, bowing with bodies as many as all realms, atoms, in all aspects, with supreme faith I pay homage. Do not commit any non-virtuous action. Accumulate virtue and goodness. Subdue your own mind. This is the teaching of the Buddha. Like a star, a mirage, a lamp, illusions, drops of dew, bubbles, dreams, lightning and clouds, look at all conditioned phenomena as such. Due to this merit, having attained the state of the all-seeing and thereby subduing the enemy of faults, may I liberate migrators from the ocean of existence stirred by waves of aging, sickness, and death. I take refuge in the Guru. I take refuge in the Buddha. I take refuge in the Dharma. I take refuge in the Sangha. I take refuge in the Guru. I take refuge in the Buddha. I take refuge in the Dharma. I take refuge in the Sangha. I take refuge in the Guru. I take refuge in the Buddha. I take refuge in the Dharma. I take refuge in the Sangha. I take refuge until I am enlightened in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. By the positive potential I create by listening to the Dharma, may I obtain Buddhahood in order to benefit all sentient beings. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free of suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the joyful happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from holding some close and others distant. Respectfully, I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind. I present clouds of every type of offering, actual and imagined. I confess all my negative actions accumulated since beginningless time, and rejoice in the virtuous actions of all ordinary and noble beings. Please, Buddha, remain as our guide, and turn the wheel of Dharma until samsara ends. Through the merit created by myself and others, may the two bodhicittas ripen. May I obtain Buddhahood for the sake of all sentient beings. This offering I make of a precious jeweled mandala, together with pure offerings and wealth, and the virtues we have collected throughout the three times with our body, speech, and mind. O my masters, my Yidams, and the three precious jewels, I offer all to you with unwavering faith. Accepting these out of your boundless compassion, please send forth waves of your blessing. Hidam Guru Ratnam Mandalakam Nirityami. The Heart of Perfection of Wisdom Sutra, Prajnaparamrita. I prostrate to the Arahat Triple Gem. Thus did I hear at one time the Bhagavan was dwelling on the mass of Vultures Mountain on Rajatihara, together with a great community of monks and a great community of bodhisattvas. At that time, the Bhagavan was absorbed in the concentration on the categories of phenomena called profound perception. Also at that time, the Bodhisattva Mahasattva Arya Avalokiteshvara looked upon the very practice of the profound perfection of wisdom and beheld those five aggregates also as empty of inherent nature. Then through the power of the Buddha, the Venerable Shariputra said this to the Bodhisattva Mahasattva Arya Avalokiteshvara: how should any son of the lineage train who wishes to practice the activity of the profound perfection of wisdom? He said that, and the Bodhisattva Mahasattva Arya Avalokiteshvara said this to the Venerable Shariputra: Shariputra, any son of the lineage or daughter of the lineage who wishes to practice the activity of the profound perfection of wisdom should look upon it like this, correctly and repeatedly, beholding those five aggregates also as empty of inherent nature. Form is empty. Emptiness is form. Emptiness is not other than form. Form is also not other than emptiness. In the same way, feeling, discrimination, compositional factors, and consciousness are empty. Shariputra, likewise, all phenomena are emptiness, without characteristic, unproduced, unceased, stainless, not without stain, not deficient, not fulfilled. Shariputra, therefore, in emptiness there is no form, no feeling, no discrimination, no compositional factors, no consciousness, no eye, no ear, no nose, no tongue, no body, no mind, no visual form, no sound, no odor, no taste, no object of touch, and no phenomenon. There is no eye element, and so on, and up to and including no mind element, and no mental consciousness element. There is no ignorance, no extinction of ignorance, and so on, and up to and including no aging and death, and no extinction of aging and death. Similarly, there is no suffering, origination, cessation, and path. There is no exalted wisdom, no attainment, and also no non-attainment. Shariputra, therefore, because there is no attainment, bodhisattvas rely on and dwell in the perfection of wisdom, the mind without obscuration and without fear. Having completely passed beyond error, they reach the end point in nirvana. All the Buddhas who dwell in the three times also manifestly completely awakened to surpassable, perfect, complete enlightenment in reliance on the perfection of wisdom. Therefore, the mantra of perfection of wisdom, the mantra of great knowledge, the unsurpassed mantra, the mantra equal to the unequaled, the mantra that thoroughly pacifies all suffering, should be known as a truth, since it is not false. The mantra of the perfection of wisdom is declared. Teata, gate gate, paragate, parasangate, bodhisoha. Now we repeat the mantra 21 times, and I'll start again after 21. Tayata, gate gate, paragate, parasamgate, bodhisoha. Shariputra, the bodhisattva, mahasattva, should train in the profound perfection of wisdom like that. Then the Bhagavan arose from that concentration and commended the bodhisattva, mahasattva, Arya Avalokiteshvara, saying, "Well said, well said, son of the lineage. It is like that, it is like that. One should practice the profound perfection of wisdom, just as we indicated. Even the Tathagatas rejoice." The Bhagavan having thus spoken, the venerable Shariputra, the Bodhisattva, Mahasattva, Arya, Avalokiteshvara, while the surrounding in their entirety, along with the world of gods, humans, asuras, and Gandharvas, were overjoyed and highly praised that spoken by the Bhagavan.
Good morning. Andrew's prepared a talk for the last 2 months, so I'm not going to talk very long, so he'll have time, and then we'll take a break at 11:55 for 10 minutes, and then have 24 minutes of meditation. Today is Lama Tsongkhapa Day. This is when we celebrate the life of Losang Drakpa, whose nickname was Lama Tsongkhapa, or Tsongkhapa. He was the founder of our lineage, which includes, of course, the Dalai Lama. It's been a very busy 2 months for me. So when I had a meeting with Geshe Damchula just a couple of days ago, I says, "Oh, what are you guys doing for Lama Tsongkhapa Day?" And I go, "Well, you know, it's in December, so I haven't decided yet." Well, he reminded me it was today. So it was one of those, like, what are you doing? So I'm here, like that. Even lamas sometimes forget things, you know. So when Rinpoche was here, Jada Rinpoche was here, we also were hosting Dr. Kalsang, the Tibetan Mempa doctor, and I misunderstood, and I stayed with her instead of going over to Zanabazar and saying goodbye to Rinpoche. So Geshe-la called me the next day, so where were you? So I go, "Well, I didn't know I needed to be there." So you know, I'm just sharing that because a lot of times people put teachers on the wrong pedestal, right? It's not about being perfect. So I need reminders, and maybe also I've got some early dementia. I don't know. I didn't use that as an excuse. You know, when you screw up in Dharma things, you just have to say, "I screwed up. I'll email Rinpoche," and like that, you know, say goodbye. So, because and for us here and for Geshe Damchula, like Lion Soar and Dona Darge and Zanabazar, big deal. It's a big deal because we're trying something very new in our lineage. As far as I know, this isn't making me special, but it kind of puts more pressure, actually. As far as I know, I'm the only ordained American Lama in the Dalai Lama's tradition. And on top of that, been monk, but not monk now, Sabine and I celebrated 10th anniversary yesterday. Here she is. She walked up with me. Hi. There she is. Yeah. Thank you for being here. We're doing something really totally new, at least within our lineage, that we're really trying to do temple practice, meaning doing practice that involves the kids, that involves families, that involves people working, and doing high-level tantric practice at the same time. The practices of tantra, the higher tantras, Mahamudra and Dzogchen, are traditionally, actually they're very secret. Now you can do anything on the internet, but as far as like lineage goes, as far as really getting permission to teach them and to do them properly, it's actually quite rare. There's a lot of books, YouTubes, everything, of course, but so we're really doing something very special that actually is in line with Lama Tsongkhapa's vision, that is bringing authentic Dharma to as many people as possible. So, you know, Sabina was asking me on the way over here, well, what's special about Lama Tsongkhapa? And actually the same thing that was special and is special about Padmasambhava and Shakyamuni Buddha and Yeshit Sogyal and Longchenpa and, of course, present Dalai Lama and Karmapa is bringing actually the highest level of openness and compassion and teaching to the widest possible people. So that's a difficult job, because usually when you widen things out, they dilute, correct? Or usually when you try to keep things very secret, then they kind of become just secret societies. So the challenge, the mission here that Jada Rinpoche and Dalai Lama and Geshe Lanai and Vatsa are trying to do, and all of we're trying to do, is do highest quality Dharma, no silliness, no ego trips. Well, a little bit of ego trips can do, but so no money trips, no drunken trips, no sex trips. No, you know, it's just clean, clear Dharma, but at highest level for the greatest number of people, very inclusive. That's a good vision, right? And that's really what, you know, Padmasambhava and Atisha and Yeshit Sogyal, the great men and women practitioners, saying we want to open up Dharma to literally everybody and do it completely in a wonderful, non-manipulative, completely pure way. So Lama Tsongkhapa tried to, and I think succeeded, let's hope so. He studied with all the available teachers of the time, you know, Kargyu, Nyingma, Shakya, Kadampa, and put together a teaching program that we're still using. So the Lama Room teachings that Geshe is doing are based on Atisha and Lama Tsongkhapa's and Guru Rinpoche's practices. So the reason he studied with his 50 teachers is he could actually do the practices from 50 teachers. So this is important. So we've all had a lot of different teachers, but do you actually do all the practices you receive from all the teachers? Probably not, right? So it said that Lama Tsongkhapa, actually each teaching he was able to practice. Maybe he didn't sleep very much. What do you think? On the practice of Guru Yoga, which is Lama Tsongkhapa Day is meant to be, it's meant to celebrate the living quality of the teachings. We need a teacher to inspire us in our tradition. We need a teacher to mentor us so that we can imitate, so we can learn by association, so we can learn by familiarization, so we can learn by just being around. That's how kids learn, isn't that right? You know, they have to hang out. You're not going to learn language unless you hear it being taught. So we need actually teachers to be around, to hang out with, that are models for us, that we want to be like, at least on the essential level. So we can't model just on information, you can't model just on books, you can't just model on YouTube. Also, we need accountability. We do need a teacher that occasionally calls us on our stuff, right? Holds us accountable, which also means holds, you know, says when we're doing well. good to see you. You're doing well. Keep going. You know, finally, we need a teacher that inspires us completely to want us to wake up totally ourselves, inspires us inside. So we're not just imitating the teacher, we're being inspired to wake up ourselves, be a Buddha, right? That's what we just prayed for. Isn't that right? Yeah. So in our tradition, particularly Dharma Buddhist tradition, we don't worship the teachers as rock stars or as perfect beings. We pay homage to our teachers just as we would to anybody that we feel is practiced and is an inspiration to us. So here, of course, people do bows, but in Tibet, everyone would do bows, or India, everyone would do bows because that's polite. But I say here, if you don't want to bow, don't bow, you know? Or if you don't want to say the prayers, don't say the prayers. Just don't be talking on your cell phone. Okay, just that's the minimum, like that. Okay. Also, what's unique about this Dharma Center and what we're trying to do is doing secular Dharma and religious linear Dharma. So we're doing Monday night evening and morning sitting groups, right? And I've recently met with people that have volunteered to help out with that. So for that, you don't have to take refuge, you don't have to say any prayers, if you want to, but you just show up and meditate. It's really important. Doing the mindfulness practice is secular Dharma. You don't have to believe anything, you know, just sit still and be kind. And then people want to take empowerments, want to join the mythic world lineage Dharma, then we can do that. So having those two go together, that's also quite unique. Usually they're split, right? That's correct. So this also is part of Lama Tsongkhapa's vision, his emphasis on all the practical teachings of Lamrim. No one has to argue that things are impermanent. Phenomena are changing, right? So that's that everyone could recognize. Everyone can recognize we're born and we die. Everybody can recognize that things are difficult and suffering when we don't know what we're doing. So even the Buddha taught secular Dharma, things that everybody could recognize whether they took refuge in him or not, whatever their religious basis. So in our tradition, we really emphasize the Lamrim practices, which include what's called Lojong, like mind training practices. 7-point mind training is something that we need to get into more. 7-point mind training means like these are practical Dharma steps. Can anybody recite it? What's their favorite? Does anybody know a practical Lojong saying right off the top of their head? Yeah, all blame with Dawn. Then Andrew's going to have one. Don't expect applause, right? Yes. So really, if you have to practice very simple things, practice the four thoughts that turn the mind, recognizing how precious human birth is, recognizing impermanence, recognizing cause and effect in karma, recognizing defect in samsara, developing the bodhicitta and taking refuge in something that's real, and then finally doing the Lojong practice. Practical things, right? In Tantra, we do the deity yoga then. But if you really, really want to make it simple, at least do Lojong and Dzogchen teachings. At least do that. The practical, bring together the highest in the practical teachings. Bring together nature, mind, complete freedom, and understanding law, cause, and effect. So Padmasambhava said, my mind is as vast as the sky, my activity is as fine as barley flour, like that. So the complete liberation from all fixation and conforming to the law of karma and cause and effect is totally our way. And that's that from Buddha to Guru Rinpoche in Tibet, Tisha, Tsongkhapa, Longchenpa, Jigme Lingpa, our present wonderful Dalai Lama and Dujin Rinpoche all bring together those two aspects, the relative world and the absolute world. And when you do that, it's called the middle way. Capiche? Okay. Now it's 11:30, so I'm going to stop here. Thank you for coming.
Test. Okay, can everyone hear me?
Oh, yeah.
Awesome. So is anyone here for the first time? Welcome. So as Lama said, my name's Andrew. I'm one of the Refuge Sangha. So I'm going to talk a little bit about pride today. Some of you may know I've been doing a series of talks on the kleshas. The kleshas are emotions that cause conflict. The kleshas are also known as the poisons. You may have heard of the three poisons, attachment, aversion, and ignorance. In Mahayana Buddhism, there are five poisons, which adds on pride and envy. Pride is a combination of ignorance and attachment, and envy is a combination of attachment and aggression. So today I'm going to talk about pride, and my sources for this talk are Darshan Sessions with Lamala, Kenshin Throngkhap Rinpoche, His Holiness the Dalai Lama, Geshe Langkhar Thapa, Alexander Berzin, and last but not least, the man of the hour, Lama Tsongkhapa. So when Lama asked me to talk about pride, my first reaction was, well, isn't pride kind of a good thing? Maybe a little bit. You know, I was looking at a Western dictionary definition of pride, and here it is: a feeling of deep pleasure or satisfaction derived from one's own achievements. The achievements of those with whom one is closely associated, or from qualities or possessions that are widely admired. So maybe it's easy to see that the other kleshas are bad and wrong, but can't pride be a good thing? I mean, there's a whole parade dedicated to it, right? We tell our kids we're proud of them. You know, pride and self-esteem are used interchangeably in our society. Isn't it good to have self-esteem? So I posed these questions to Lamala, and his response was that in Dharma, there's a fundamental difference between pride and self-esteem. He said that self-esteem is confidence, seeing oneself as worthy, good enough, and valuable. So if we have to objectify a self, it's good to say that we are a good person. It's fundamentally saying that I as a person have these values and qualities and that I act in accordance with them. Lamala knows in his mental health work, there's a form of therapy called acceptance and commitment therapy. And the basic idea behind it is that if we act in accordance with our values, that we have our highest sense of well-being. So self-esteem goes with honoring oneself and others. When we're proud of our children, it's usually because they've acted in accordance with important values like helping others. When we have self-esteem, it's hard to imagine violating our values. So then we can see that LGBT pride, pride in our actions, or pride in our children is not a bad thing. So Lamala says that we want people to feel pride in their practice. This is acting in accordance with our values, right? So then if pride is not self-esteem or confidence, according to Buddhism, then what is it? Pride is more of a complete feeling of entitlement, of privilege. Lama says it's like a feeling of solidity, like we're a mountain, like we're at the top and that we're impregnable. It creates a false sense of stability that we get attached to. Pride is always hierarchical, like I'm better than you. Pride is translated in Sanskrit as mana, which is also at times translated as arrogance or conceit. Pride separates self and others with the qualifier that one is better than others in some way. Remember that Lamala said kleshas are emotions that cause conflict. Pride is definitely an emotion that causes conflict. Lama says it's particularly destructive because it comes from a dominance viewpoint. It just eats things up along its path. You know, I'm better than others, or we're better than others. We get to control, dominate, rule. Of course, we can see this in leaders, in governments, and in hate groups. It can be even more subtle in terms of workplace politics. For example, I work at a hospital, and there's just an incredibly rigid hierarchy there. And even Sangha politics. So I have a question. If pride separates and causes dominance, and compassion joins us at another person's level, can a compassionate person also be a prideful person? According to Lamala, a prideful person can be a very compassionate person. It's just that the compassion in this case is ultimately in the service of building one's ego. I'm such a good and compassionate person. Look what I did. Or, I'm more compassionate than Peter. This is spiritual materialism. So, I gave my first Dharma talk up here about 2 years ago, and I remember getting this rush from being up here. I was in front of all these people, they were looking at me as if I had some kind of wisdom to give them, right? Some people were even taking notes. And some people came up to me afterward and told me they liked my talk. So I remember having this interesting dual awareness of happiness that it had gone well and kind of this detached perspective of how I could let myself have that experience go to my head if I wasn't careful. So I told Lamala about it in Darshan. He said it was fine to take in the feedback that people had benefited from the talk, and he agreed that using the feedback to feed my ego would be counterproductive. I remember Lama gave a talk in July on Buddhist teachers who kind of go off the rails and behave badly. Noah Levine, Sasaki Roshi, Sogyal Rinpoche, Geshe Michael Roach are some examples. And I wonder if at least a small amount of their problems related to their being exalted by others and having it go to their heads. You know, pride goeth before a fall. Has anyone ever heard of this term, acquired situational narcissism? I love this concept. It's a psychologist invented this. It's like when somebody becomes famous, like maybe they weren't famous as a child, but they had some skill, like they were an athlete or an actor or something like this, and they're just exalted over and over and over again. They're being told how great they are, and that goes to their heads. It's kind of the opposite of narcissistic personality, because that usually comes from this deficiency place. But people that are exalted, they think they're better than others. Has anyone ever actually met a celebrity? Did you like not know what to say, or like, I love you, I love your work, or something? Like, we want to exalt them, right? Because somehow they're supposedly better than us. So my last talk was on envy, which is the state of wanting what others have and seeing them as having a higher status than yourself, which again is a combination of ignorance and aggression. So pride's maybe the opposite, seeing oneself as if you're in that position of higher status, an object worthy of others' envy. So last time I talked about how social psychologists say that we're constantly comparing ourselves against others on the social hierarchy. You know, he's older, she's prettier, I'm shorter. And this can be a bit exhausting. And usually doing this comparison, we end up finding ourselves lacking in some way. And so maybe it feels kind of good and relieving when we see ourselves as being a little bit higher on the social hierarchy. Again, it's not a position that makes us think that there's really anything wrong with it in that moment. And being a psychologist, I'm very used to getting put on a pedestal in my work a lot, especially with therapy clients who see themselves as deficient and project perfection onto me. But fortunately, I get to come home to two teenagers every day, who pretty much on a daily basis remind me I'm not all that. So, Lama says that pride is very difficult to address because it doesn't lead to self-investigation. It's like addiction. The hallmark of addiction is denial. I don't want to hear it. Anger, jealousy, and the other kleshas lead to self-reflection when one realizes it's not working for them. In power and dominance issues, people don't want to change the way things they don't want to change the way they are. Our capitalist society tends to reward those who self-promote and rise to the top. Self-promotion is often seen as necessary for this success. Those who would try to knock us off our pedestal just don't understand us. They're just jealous. Lamala says pride isn't like I'm great, it's I'm better than you are. He says it's the honey on the razor's edge. And that was the first time I'd ever heard that term, and it was such a striking image, the honey on the razor's edge. So I had to look it up, and this is where Lama Tsongkhapa comes in. It's from Lam Rim. If I am never satisfied by sensual desires, which are like honey on a razor's edge, how could I be satiated with merit, whose fruition is happiness and peace? So Lama also says that pride is on the praise side of praise and blame. Remember the eight worldly dharmas? So praise and blame, so it lands on praise. He says that I haven't met many people who don't have a strong response to praise or blame. One criticism from a Sangha member causes anger. One praise causes the person to blow up like a balloon. Pride leaves a lot of suffering in its wake. It sows the seeds for lots of countless acts of karmic harm, and it becomes easier for the perpetrator to hide from seeing those consequences to others and to themselves. If pride is such a subtle emotion, then how do we recognize when we're being prideful so that we can apply an antidote? So Alexander Berzin recommends noticing if there is an unease when you're about to say or do something. He says that this is a sign that there is a klesha present. So he gives an example. Let's say if we try to explain something to somebody, if we notice that there's a little bit of uneasiness in our stomach while we're speaking to the person, that's a good indication that there's some pride behind it, for instance. We might feel, how clever I am. I understand it. I'm going to help you understand it. We may sincerely want to help that other person by explaining something to them, but if we feel a little bit uneasy in our stomach, there's some pride there. That especially happens when we speak about our own achievements or our own good qualities. Very often, we experience that with a little bit of uneasiness. So Buddhism teaches that the root cause of our suffering is ignorance of how things truly exist, in an empty and interdependent manner. When we reify the I to be truly self-independent and substantially existing, we suffer as a result. Pride inflates this I, this ego. Of course, when we focus on an I, we're then creating an other, or many others, which creates the drama of us versus them. Lamala says that based on the five skandhas, or five aggregates, we attribute a sense of separate self. This misperceived self is always looking for confirmation, validation, a reference point. It's needing that narcissistic validation. So we can see how pride is definitely fits with the kleshas. So you're asking yourself, what do we do about it, right? So in Buddhism, we talk about antidotes to poisons. Right. So another term for antidote is purification practice. The five poisons are each seen as having opposite purifications. This is seen in the idea of the five Buddha families, where each poison is purified in order to realize the enlightened qualities of the Buddhas and the five Buddha families. So this is from Kenshin Throngpa Rinpoche. The essential nature of a bodhisattva or a Buddha is that he or she embraces the enlightened qualities of the five Buddha families, which pervade every living being without exception, including ourselves. To achieve the realization of these five Buddha families, or the five Dhyana Buddhas, it is necessary to abandon the five disturbing emotions of great attachment, anger, or aggression, ignorance or bewilderment, pride and envy. When these disturbing emotions are purified and removed, the five wisdoms shine forth. Realizations of the five wisdoms is realization of the five Dhyana Buddhas. The five Buddha families are depicted as a mandala. In the south of the mandala is Ratnasambhava, Buddha of the Ratna family, who is yellow and represents the wisdom of equanimity and its opposite pride. The fulsomeness of pride is transmuted into the quality of, including all phenomena as elements in the rich display. Ratna is associated with the element earth, with autumn, with fertility and depth. So then we can see here that equanimity is a purification of pride. So does anyone remember where we recited equanimity this morning in our prayers? In the four immeasurables, which is a recognition of the interdependence of everything and everyone, free from holding some close and others distant. So another place that, as Lama said, we should all be practicing Lojong. And when you're stuck, it's always good to go back to Lojong and look for antidotes. The eight verses is a Kadampa text of Lojong, or mind training, written by the Kadampa master Geshri Longpa Thongpa. The first seven verses deal with method in bodhicitta, and the eighth deals with wisdom. So this is where I first thought of when I thought, what are the antidotes to pride? Is there's two of these verses that are very clearly about this. And the first one is verse 2, which is, to me, the most direct antidote. And this is how it goes. When in the company of others, I shall always consider myself the lowest of all, and from the depths of my heart hold others dear and supreme. So His Holiness did commentary on this verse, and this is what he said about it. No matter who we are with, we often think things like, I am stronger than him, I am more beautiful than her, I am more intelligent, I am wealthier, I am much better qualified, and so forth. We generate much pride. This is not good. Instead, we should always remain humble. Even when we are helping others and are engaged in charity work, we should not regard ourselves in a haughty way as great protectors benefiting the weak. This too is pride. Rather, we should engage in such activities as very humble. We should engage in such activities very humbly and think that we are offering our services up to the people. When we compare ourselves with animals, for instance, we might think, I have a human body, or I'm an ordained person, and feel much higher than them. From one point of view, we can say that we have human bodies and are practicing the Buddhist teachings and are thus much better than insects. But from another, we can say that insects are very innocent and free from guile, whereas we often lie and misrepresent ourselves in devious ways in order to achieve our ends or better ourselves. From this point of view, we have to say that we are much worse than insects, which just go about their business without pretending to be anything. This is one method of training in humility. Also, I think the first verse works well. This is how it goes. Determined to obtain the greatest possible benefit for all sentient beings who are more precious than a wish-fulfilling jewel, I shall hold them most dear at all times. Again, this is His Holiness. We ourselves and all other beings want to be happy and completely free of suffering. In this, we are all exactly equal. However, each of us is only one, while other beings are infinite in number. Now, there are two attitudes to consider, that of selfishly cherishing ourselves and that of cherishing others. The self-cherishing attitude makes us very uptight. We think we are extremely important, and our basic desire is for ourselves to be happy and for things to go well for us. Yet, we don't know how to bring this about. In fact, acting out of self-cherishing can never make us happy. Those who have the attitude of cherishing others regard all other beings as much more important than themselves and value helping others above all else. And acting in this way, incidentally, they themselves become very happy. For example, politicians who are genuinely concerned with helping or serving other people are recorded in history with respect, while those who are constantly exploiting and doing bad things to others go down as examples of bad people. So another antidote, Lama Lo, I was hoping I could get your help with this, is Tonglen. I didn't actually have time to research this one enough, so I thought I would defer to you if you could say a few things about that. Would that be all right?
Sacrifices for Dharma. Thank you, Pierre. Very briefly, Tonglen is Tibetan. It means sending and taking. So we're sending someone our health, and we're taking on disease, which is the opposite of how we normally stay healthy, right? But the idea is to soften our resistance to other people's problems and our own, developing empathy. And then empathy turns into a compassion activity like that. So many people are familiar with Tonglen practice through the Acharya Pema Chodron. Her books are really wonderful. So I call her, Pema Rinpoche, like that. Yeah. So that's an important practice, difficult practice to do on the spot. But that's part of the main 7-point mind training, and the technique is you start on the breath with a visualization, start with someone easy, and then you go to someone difficult, like that. I don't think I should say too much, but it's important practice.
Exchanging oneself for others, right, Lama, that it kind of helps with equanimity and not putting yourself above them.
it's hard to be prideful when you're actually just being compassionate, you know. You just forget who you are, and you just want to help, and then suddenly you forget, you know, that you're supposed to be better, hopefully. Real compassion always has wisdom, doesn't it? Yeah.
So we have just a few minutes for questions or comments, if anyone would like to offer any of their thoughts.
I just wanted to let people know who hadn't been to Marie's Tonglen class. I think it's the third Friday of every month. It's really, really a great class. So if you want to go a little bit deeper, it's highly, highly recommend that.
Thanks.
I just wanted to ask a question about investigating reputation. To what degree is that all pride, or is that other elements of the cliches that are involved?
Can you say more what you mean by investigating reputation?
Reputation, you know, it's part of, you know, your reputation as, oh, for example, what you do in your work or something, you know. So part of that is pride, but is it also any other elements of the cliches? I don't know, so that's what I'm asking.
You mean beyond pride? Just, well, probably attachment to an identity, I could say. Like, if I think that's interesting, I think one of the first things we ask people is, what do you do? Like, that's how we begin. That's one of the social comparison things that we do. Oh, you know, your job is lower than mine, or your job is higher than mine. So I think if we over-attach to our identity of what we're doing, then it's kind of spiritual materialism. Like, oh, I help people, I'm a psychologist, so I'm a good person. I mean, we should be proud, I think, of what when we're doing good, we should be proud of that. But the more that we are seeing that as making ourselves better, putting ourselves above others as exalted in some way, then we're in trouble, I think.
What do you mean by reifying the I? I've never heard that.
I'm going to defer to Lama because I can talk relative. He can talk ultimate.
Well, what would you say if I wasn't here? That's what I'm interested in.
I would say, have a darshan session with Lama.
It just means making our sense of self very solid. So the misperceived self is the same as your just regular self. It's just that you take it to be more than it is. Where it's at last, when the particular self goes away, when the conditions have gone away, right? But for reifying, we're making it into a thing like that, literally. Yeah. It's hard not to feel like there's actually something inside, though, isn't it? Like right now, we all feel like we're somebody inside us, in our body somewhere. Don't we feel that way? Just that kind of, even that sense can turn into something very solid, particularly when we're insulted, right? Then the pride comes out really strongly, and you know, you can't say that to me, and it's used a lot in the monastery, you know, to they'll kind of build you up a little bit and then punch the balloon a little bit. It's very subtle, because generally after years of practice, people can still be like, they want to be recognized for being humble, right? So it's tricky.
I was thinking about that Beatles song, all through the day, I me mine, I me mine, I me mine. Right. So, okay, well, this is our break point, so everyone can have a stretch, and we'll be back 5 minutes?
10 minutes.
10 minutes.
Let's be realistic, yeah. We're going to try 24 minutes. Can you do it? Yeah. I'm just going to say a few things at close. So, once again, very inspiring to see all of you, Tsongkhapa Day. It's wonderful. This was good Dharma talk and discussion. Good Dharma talk stays on topic. You know what the topic is, right? Good Dharma talk uses logic. You know, it says things that make sense, just reason. Good Dharma talk cites appropriate text or scripture. Good Dharma talk, this is classical, good Dharma talk cites discussion with one's lama, and then good Dharma talk you know, brings forth from one's own experience, right? So it met all those qualifications, so thank you very much. So hopefully Andrew and Cynthia will hang out and take some snacks, and then somebody, then after Dharma talk, this is very traditional Asia, you know, you wouldn't even ask questions in Asia, let alone criticize, but then then in the break you can say, well, that was really interesting what you said about that, but wouldn't you take it this way, you know, so maybe somebody will do that with Andrew, like, that was really interesting, but I would put it this way, wouldn't you, you know, like that. That's how our tradition, like, goes forward. Okay, so enjoy the beautiful day. And thank you, choir, very much. It's good. Sets the right tone. Omahung. Yeah. Have a mind like the sky and action like as fine as barley flour. Okay? Let's do closing. Okay, Peter, thank you.
Closing prayers are on page 15. Due to the merits of these virtuous actions, may I quickly attain the state of Guru Buddha, lead all living beings without exception into that enlightened state. May the supreme jewel bodhicitta that has not arisen, arise and grow. May that which has arisen not diminish, but increase more and more. In the land encircled by snow mountains, you are the source of all happiness and good. All-powerful Chenrezig Tenzin Gyatso, please remain until samsara ends. May the teachings of the Buddha flourish, and may the upholders of the teachings remain forever. May all migrators achieve happiness, and may they fulfill all their temporary and ultimate goals. Losan, magical display of a deep awareness of all the victorious ones. Merciful giver of a stream of profound and vast instruction to the fortunate migrators. Please remain always unperishing, unchanging, unfading. Avalokiteshvara, great treasure of objectless compassion. Manjushri, master of flawless wisdom. Vajrapani, destroyer of the entire hosts of Mara. Tsongkhapa, crown jewel of the solely land stages. Losandrapa, I make requests at your holy feet. Thank you, Lama.